well. I have plotted my revenge on you. Now I shall have it. Bid farewell to your friend.
Doom hates us all, but in his warped mind, he has a personal score to settle with me.
So, welcome back to the show. We Operation thought we Tuesday. Needed a little bit, perhaps a little bit of a palate cleanser. And we got our man, my man, everyone's man, Limps here. We're going to talk a little bit of Packers, a little bit of Bucks, see if we're, I don't know what we're doing. Are we pre-mourning? Are we still a little optimistic? I'm not exactly sure. We're kind of talking out of every side of our mouth right now, but from Packers talk, I guess you can tell the people where you're from. Our Packer insider, Chris Limpsis, what's going on, man?
Not much. Yeah, I'm on PackersTalk.com. That's where you can find the show, Limps Talk and Pack. Yeah, it's on iTunes, Spotify, all that good stuff. Yeah, thanks for having me.
I can't express, yo, how much fun the Packer season was last year for me.
Oh yeah.
And for me, like riding a bicycle. And I was actually, I didn't spend as much time prepping for this. I thought we'd just kind of wing it. But I know, I feel like the first conversation, I think you've been on two, I think this is maybe the third time, but I feel like the first time we did more kind of the Rodgers stuff, because that was the early, it seemed like the end, but like I feel like there were more twists and turns to that kind of story. And I feel like I started out thinking you were right. And then for a couple of years when Rodgers was still good, I felt like I was sort of right. And it came right back around the last year to you being right with Love just looking. I mean, maybe this, I phrase this in this compliment in the form of a question, like, man, how good is Jordan Love going to be next year? Is it possible? Is he top eight? Is he top five? Like, what are your projections for next year? I guess I'd ask.
I honestly believe with Jordan Love, the sky is the limit. I don't know about next season. I mean, I think next season he can certainly vault himself into being a top five or six quarterback in the game. But I mean, when you look at like the structure they've set up on offense with all of these guys being so young around him, this is a group that they can probably keep together for at least the next two, probably 3 years. So when you factor in that they can all kind of grow together, Love and all these skill position guys and the offensive line as well, I think three, 4 years down the line, we could be talking about Love as, you know, one of the best two or three quarterbacks in the game. Absolutely.
I felt watching, and I've been pretty transparent about this, that I was basically more or less the lapsed Packers fan / Packers haters for the majority of the Rodgers era. So certainly you shouldn't listen to me for any kind of coherence. I'm really on the Buck stuff too. Don't look to me for coherence. Look to me for takes. Look for me for passion. Don't look to me for coherence. But there reached a certain point, maybe after the Steelers game, there was kind of like, as I recall, this could be off, but there was early, really good signs. And then there was this great kind of disappointing crater where there were games where they were kind of in it. I seem to recall the Falcons game was maybe an early example of this. And then my son, to my great, great, great shame, started playing like soccer with some kids on Sundays. And so I'd be listening to these games, but much like these Bucks games now, like, the incompetence couldn't hurt me. So the Panthers game, you know, it's, oh, we're up 10 or we're up 14 or whatever it is. And I'm listening to the radio or I've got it on an app and they're just describing this incompetence. And of course, there was all this dialogue about the defensive coordinator and all this, but it didn't touch me. Like the Steelers game didn't really touch me. The Raiders game didn't really touch me. And then I was so invested in that last Bears game. And then obviously the Cowboys game, but it just ended like almost just like a movie, just like the perfect three act structure for last season. It was just like,
sure.
And dude, again, this isn't a question. We killed the Cowboys. Like it could have been even worse than it was. Like, I can't tell you,
it was really like, like I kind of shot past being excited.
Yeah.
In that first half to being like, I kept looking at my wife and going, is this real? Because I thought they could win that game, but I don't think anybody expected that the way they just laid it on them right away. It was like when Savage, you know, with the pick six in the second quarter, I was like, I kind of stopped almost cheering and was just in disbelief. Like, I can't believe this is happening.
I don't think I was in the bathroom for that. I think it was I was doing the thing where the antenna in my bedroom was like basically right on point without the delay, but I was kind of running back and forth to the room I'm in now where the computer, which man feels like a full 25 seconds behind. And so I could hear like an auditory shift from the other room, like something's going on. Then I run back to the other room. He's running into the end zone or whatever. And it just seemed fake. I mean, it was almost too good. Like you said, it was almost too good to be true. And
it really was. It was surreal. It was very surreal.
You being so much deeper into this, the Niners loss,
mm-hmm.
is it still really sting or is it just, hey, charge it to the game? You got, or even all the strategic stuff that happened at the end of that game. Like, what was your, I did listen to those episodes, but I don't particularly recall. What was your take on the strategy of the field goal and kind of how all of that ended up?
Well, there were a few decisions in that game that I think were kind of head scratchers for me. I didn't mind when they went for it. I don't remember. I'm trying to think back to the game now. When they tried the Jordan Love sneak.
Yeah.
Early, I think it was fairly early in the game. I didn't mind that decision to go for it. I hated that play call. That have Jordan get beneath the center and guard. I'm like, that's a play for a more physical football team. The Packers were not really that team. So I thought that was I didn't like that play call. I didn't have any problem going for the field goal. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, Carlson kind of has to make that kick.
Yeah.
And didn't. And I think, you know, so I didn't have a problem so much with that, more as just the kicker not making the kick.
It's, and I felt this game 8 or so. Really, I felt this right at the beginning with the Bears win, but I just kind of felt like, I don't know what the numbers say. I don't know what the QBR or any of these things say, but he was just making all the throws at a certain point. And yeah, he really started to come up short at the end of the Niners game. But I only know so much Favre. I've watched more Favre games than probably all other games combined. I felt like there was a possibility that he could make every throw and win every game. And we kind of went from like, wow, all the deep balls are kind of moon balls to a little bit better or, you know. And I just felt like at some point throughout the course of the year, it went from he might make a good throw to, wow, he's made 7 great throws in a row.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, I think what happened at the end of the Niner game, because I've sort of changed my stance on that. I think in the days after I was looking at it as a real blown opportunity. And I think I sort of said as much on the show, but I think time has sort of softened my stance on that. I think I look back and go like, they took the second best team in football all the way down to the wire. And I really think if Zach Tom, the right tackle, had not left that game with a concussion in the fourth quarter, I think they probably would have won that game.
Yeah.
I think that was a big part of it. And I also think for Love, I don't feel like, I mean, he did come up short at the end of that San Francisco game, but I look at it as a really great learning moment for him. I think for the first time, because Love has always been so, it's really impressed me how cool he's been and how in control he's been. I think that was the first time the moment maybe was a little too big for him, which is totally okay. That's totally in line with the development of a young quarterback. So I think he's really going to learn from that fourth quarter in San Francisco, and I think he's going to be so much better for it going forward.
I think that's one of the kind of wonderful things about football, and actually it ties into kind of all the philosophy and the things I feel about basketball, where it's like, I was listening to somebody, and because I don't particularly remember any of the plays, but they said something that I thought was true, although I didn't notice that when McCaffrey fumbled in the Super Bowl, he never ran the same way again. And I did kind of feel, and it's like, yeah, just about every year that happens to multiple teams, because it's human, and it's not just human nature, but I think it's just right, which is what's so marvelous. Like, playoff basketball should basically be, yes, we've done the same things all year, but hey, all of a sudden, man, dude, I'm 0 for 4 from 3. Do I have the fortitude to keep shooting? Should I do something else? What do I do now? Because it matters, right? Mm-hmm. And I can't fumble again. I can't throw this pick again.
Yep.
And it's just the elevation of the stakes is something that's just, it's the point. I mean, it's wonderful. And I think that did kind of happen where after, what did he fumble? So I'm getting my timeline screwed up. Did he fumble on the scramble?
For Love or for McCaffrey?
Well, I thought about it in for McCaffrey in relation to Love. Because did Love fumble on the scramble? I'm trying to, it was
something. He threw a pick.
He threw a pick on the scramble. And then in my mind, clearly didn't want to do that again.
And I think that, I agree. I think that definitely had an effect on Love as well in that game. I think it, because he was really kind of cruising up to that point. And I think that was the first kind of like, you know, like I said, kind of that first pick he threw was kind of the first inclination of like, oh, maybe, you know, after that Love was playing, you could see he kind of was more conservative and a little bit, you could see like, oh, like, I don't think he realized almost where he was until that point, you know? And then it's like, oh man, I'm in the NFC divisional round and I've got the number one team in the conference on the ropes. And maybe it just kind of was overwhelming for him after that. But I think you're right. That first pick, it was kind of the moment it started to, we noticed that with Love.
I almost, and I'm sure everyone said this all year or said some version of this all year, but I do think it's not so much that he's better than Rodgers, but I did kind of feel, like I said, I watched 2 out of 3 games, that he was more kind of the play action LaFleur kind of quarterback that Rodgers couldn't have been and probably shouldn't have been with all his kind of improvisational brilliance, that this was kind of more the, Roethlisberger isn't the best comparison, but just the play action quarterback, you know, the,
Well, like I said on the show several times towards the end of Rodgers' era, they didn't really run the LaFleur offense. They ran what I called the version of the LaFleur offense that Rodgers deemed acceptable.
Yeah.
And I think when Love took over, it really became the LaFleur offense. And like you said, it's a lot of play action. It's a lot of the quarterback being under center, which is something we know Rodgers was open about not liking and not wanting to do towards the end in Green Bay. So yeah, I think that's definitely fair that we saw there was more of a synergy with Love and LaFleur as far as running the offense. It always felt like Rodgers and LaFleur were in this tug of war.
Yeah.
You know?
It also kind of, I mean, I don't want to talk about the Bucks quite yet, but it is, to be fair to any established kind of player, I do think it probably, like, it's hard to listen to the hot young coach. Like, we can understand it. And I think, well, let me phrase this in the form of a question. How would you, over the course of how many years, how LaFleur positive are you? And did that change last year for you?
Well, I like Matt LaFleur, and I think he's a good coach. And I think the way he was able to sort of find, because I think the thing I was frustrated with early in the season, it felt like he didn't have the pulse of the team. But from that second half up to the San Francisco game, it really felt like he had the pulse of the team. And it felt like they were all really operating as one, and which I think is so important for a coach in the NFL. But then, you know, again, we talked about some of the stuff that went on in the San Francisco game. You know, the way they lost, I do have some reservations about LaFleur, which I said on Twitter after the game and people went berserk on me for.
No, not on Twitter.
Because I said, I just have questions. I said, you know, they lose an NFC championship game at home to Tampa that they probably could have and maybe should have won. Then the next year, they're the number one seed in the NFC again. One and done. San Francisco beats them in the divisional round. Then they, you know, have a chance to make the playoffs against the Lions in the final week of the season. They don't win that game. And then say, like, just these seasons kind of, the last 4 seasons have kind of come up a little short compared to where I think they could have gone.
Yeah.
And I just go like, well, what's the one constant in all that? Because they've changed quarterbacks. You know, they've changed defensive coordinators and all that. It's Matt LaFleur. So I like LaFleur, but I'm still a little bit skeptical that he's going to be the guy to bring this team all the way. Or that he could be that guy.
So this is making me think of something else. Correct me if I have the timeline wrong. And again, I feel like this was 2 years ago. So I feel like you were pretty aggressive on the Christian Watson pick. Was that you?
Yes.
Okay, so I am recalling.
Well, not just me, but I was definitely, yeah, one of my lower moments. I was definitely not a fan of that pick.
I think, though, but again, that's there's a local radio guy who talks about, like, being right is overrated because people will still just hate you for being right. And I forget, I think it's in regard to, like, Tebow or something, like, but whoever was right about Tebow, like, people still hated him and it didn't work out. And I mean, you're basically right about that, though, right? I mean, wouldn't we say, I mean, the first eight games or whatever was really bad. And then he had like three touchdowns one of those games 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And then it was like he had two out of three great fantasy weeks, and everybody was, oh, you're an idiot. Oh, Christian Watson looks like, you know, it looks like Jerry Rice or something like that.
Yeah, I guess I shouldn't be too tough on myself on that, because we still haven't really seen Christian Watson. I mean, we've seen the highs, we've seen what he's capable of, but we haven't seen it for very long.
Yeah. And he's always hurt too. But I think there probably is some question if he's like a number one receiver, if he's more just kind of a burner, stretch the defense kind of player. Cause I mean, to the extent that, again, I'm not an expert, and I'm not even like a fake, like I'm a fake Bucs expert. I'm not a Bucs expert either, but I'm just a casual Packers fan, but it did, I'm sure everybody was talking about it. And I didn't even recognize it until I had made the one kind of year in misery video where it was like, oh, the interception went forcing it to Watson in the same corner of the end zone, the left corner, like two straight games at the end of the game. And I do kind of recall that being a little bit of a narrative that he was getting tunnel vision to Christian Watson, or just forcing it to a guy who really can't go up and get, that was more the narrative, right? That just Watson wasn't fighting for the ball.
That was a big part of it. Yeah. That Watson wasn't showing enough fight on some of those end zone shots. But then, like you saw when he caught the touchdown against Kansas City in the Sunday night game, he did everything that we had been wanting him to do, mm-hmm. where he goes up and snatches the ball away and shows those strong hands. And then, as always with Watson, you know, right when he has two great games in a row, Detroit on Thanksgiving, KC on Sunday night the next week, then he gets hurt at the end, and then that was basically a wrap for his season. So I think Christian Watson can be a top 10 receiver in the game. But I also think he may be one of these guys like, I'm drawing a blank on his name now. But one of these guys who's a tantalizing deep threat, but is just always hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think he's got a very high ceiling, but he's also got a very low floor.
So specifically for you, and as with all questions, I'm talking about me, but I'm interested in this. So when you come out and you're obviously a real fan, and you're a content creator.
Yep.
And yes, we're talking about Chris Middleton, but let's talk about Christian Watson. You're a real fan. You're tweeting. You're putting out content, but also you're living and dying with every single play.
Yep.
Is there a part of you that says, I shouldn't go this hard on this guy because if he becomes good, I'll be the Christian Watson hater guy? Or I feel like basically essentially with these kind of discourses, there's basically two levels of fan. There's kind of the trollery kind of fans who are looking to say the crazy thing for the attention. And I feel like they kind of tend to assume that everybody's that way. And there's kind of the typical kind of more conventional old school fan who is simply going to, out of frustration, say this guy's a bum, this isn't good enough, whatever else, and then almost regret it kind of a little bit later. But I just remember, for whatever reason, whenever that happened, I kind of noticed it. And it was funny once he started having like three touchdown games for that month.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're just like, oh, I'm sorry. I was wrong. And I feel like I messaged you, or maybe I said, I was like, don't apologize for that. You were right. You were right 10 out of 13 weeks.
Well, and then I joked about, I said, I go watch after one game against Dallas, people are going to be saying a star is born. And then I opened up my Instagram and I saw all these Packer accounts. A star is born. And I was like, see, I was like, guys, it's right. Still just one game. My take on that is, as far as like, I've never once censored myself as far as like, if I'm going to go in on a player. Cause like I always say on the show, my thing has always tried to be real. Like you talked about being a hater I don't look at myself as a hater or like a super positive. I just say if it's good, I'll say it's good. And if it's bad, I say it's bad. And kind of, I just try to be real about it. And I feel like, how do I say this? I feel like if I go in hard on a guy for struggling, I feel like it should be easier for fans to accept it because I'm one of you. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like you should be able to take, like, you're going to have to take your medicine on this player, but you can take it from me because I'm one of you. So, you know, I want him to do well, but it's just not happening.
Probably the most, at least for me, the most irritating version of this is there'll be a long dialogue about a player. And let's make it somebody like Portis. Portis wrecked the game. Portis, we can name a million people, but I mean someone who's done both good and bad, right? And
is he something else, Portis? He is good, it's like as good as it can be from a bench player. Like he could shoot some of those shots blindfolded like a Jedi and they still go in.
Yes.
But when he's bad, I mean, last night, you watched last night?
Oh, yeah.
He had that one sequence where he had three chances about 6 inches away from the basket, and he missed all of them. I was like, how is this the same person?
He's really not that explosive, but it is. I find him, I think, a little bit more endearing than some people, but he just drives me nuts. He just drives me nuts. I think Bucks fans, we kind of do. It's been a target-rich environment because we can all play whack-a-mole with whose fault it is for any given game, or just, you know, if you really hate Brook Lopez, there's been ample opportunity to blame games on Brook Lopez. And if you really hate Portis or Chris or the coach or certainly Dame, just basically everybody but Giannis.
Yeah. You know,
but everybody, like, the bench doesn't play, so it becomes like backup quarterback syndrome, where it's like we love the people who aren't playing because they aren't playing, you know.
Oh yeah, there's definitely a lot of that with the Bucks this year. And that's a great way to put it, the backup quarterback syndrome.
But
the most popular guy in any bad football team is backup quarterback. Yeah.
So what's your experience with this Bucks team? I can tell you're a really big Bucks fan. I mean, I don't think I'd be guessing you're still Mr. Packers, but you're always watching the game.
Oh yeah.
Describe, and I want to do kind of a series of kind of quicker interviews like this, where I just kind of ask everybody basically the same question, which is like, how has this season hit for you? Like, how have you dealt with this season? What's your, like, describe your roller coaster with this?
Oh, that's tough to do in any kind of succinct way, because the season's just been all over the place, you know? I don't know if I'm trying to, my experience, probably just like everybody, it's just been, every time it feels like they're about to turn the corner, they don't.
Right. Right.
And that's probably the most succinct way I could describe it. It's just, and it's like, oh, all right, back to the starting line. Okay, let's try this again. And then they look great, and then they look terrible. Like, you know, like they beat the Thunder a couple weeks ago, 2 weeks ago on that Sunday night. And I was like, this is it. Okay. Now it's really coming together. Okay. And then they're walloping the Lakers for 3.5 quarters. And you're like, yep, here it is.
Yep.
We did it. We made it through the swamp, and here we go. And then they blow that game to the Lakers. And it's like, they kind of haven't really been the same since.
I almost feel like, and this is, I know it comes off however it comes off. I'm not really hedging. There's an optimism I have for this team that's certainly mixed with the pessimism, but I can't accept that they're not the best team in the league, bro. Like, I cannot accept it. And so I just have a hard time. I'll turn the game off. I turned off. What was the last game? The G League Raptors. I turned that off and went to bed. I mean, I went to bed, but I was kind of still playing with my phone. And you know how you never really know when the second half starts. And it was like, by the time I looked at my phone, it was 8 minutes, and everybody's like, "Oh, they're down 12 or whatever." And I was just like, "I guess I'm not watching." And then it got close, so then I turned it on my phone for the last 6 minutes. But I just cannot accept that they're this bad. I know the stakes of what it means if they're this bad. I know the stakes of what it means for Giannis and Dame and all these kind of people if they can't get it together. And I'm just like, and again, I don't care who takes a victory dance on, jokes aside, I don't care who takes a social media victory dance, but I cannot accept that we're not better than all these teams. But I'm starting to really think that I'm wrong. And I could say it the other way too, but like, oh, they're just terrible, but have a glimmer of hope. But it just, didn't you think Lillard was better than this?
Yeah. And you know what? I still think that guy is in there. I still think the Dame too. that we had seen before this season, I think that guy is still in there. I think the stuff he's dealing with off the court has affected him. And I think, you know, just the simple fact he came in overweight.
Yeah.
You know, and he said himself, he didn't have a regular off season as far as his workouts and everything. And I still think that guy is in there. Like I don't believe he's washed. I just think maybe it's going to take an off season of him kind of getting back to normal and rededicating himself for us to see that next season.
I felt so much that it's almost the tragedy of this season, even putting aside the multiple coaches. And I do want to ask your opinion on all this.
Yeah.
And not just take away, but my pessimism now is that I think that Griffin was trying to break them down to build them up. And I think certainly Rivers is tripling down on, you guys suck. Why am I the only one who's mad? Why aren't you? Like, he called everyone not professionals, right?
He did. Oh, yeah.
And I mean, the quotes are bad. Like, you see them kind of made into Instagram screenshots and all this kind of stuff. Like, the quotes are terrible. And I do think this, because I think Portis and Pat Bev are kind of known to be people who respond more to that kind of firm hand coaching.
Mm-hmm.
But we're such a dumb team sometimes, man.
Oh.
It's
that Barkley clip.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the Barkley
clip. They've got to be the dumbest team in the NBA. That quote rings throughout my head 3 or 4 times every game I watch the box. They'll do something, and I just hear Barkley in my head going, they've got to be the dumbest team in basketball.
They got to be the dumbest team.
I tend to blame Giannis for the leadership aspect of it, but I don't think, like, if you had, like, a 1 to 12 or 1 to 15, he'd be in the middle as far as dumbest players. He does exuberant stuff, and he makes mistakes, and he doesn't always have the highest intelligence. But he didn't get a tech at the end of the game like Portis and whatever goes on with Lopez sometimes, where it seems like he's guarding like the invisible man. Like, there's just so much weird, bad stuff. But I'll tell you, like, the thing that breaks my heart almost more than anything is that Middleton doesn't even have like the Butterfingers like championship belt anymore because of Lillard. But like the turnovers for Lillard, like literally every single, like I hurt my, like a month ago, I hurt my neck flinching so hard. I have like this recurring neck injury. And I just like, you watch the game and he tried to like, does this lazy like wrap around on like pick and roll. And it just,
yep.
Like it's like one of those things where it got stolen by the right hand, but it could have got stolen by the left hand. Like it was just nowhere close. Mm-hmm. And it just is so soul crushing watching some of these games. And like you said, and then there's these games where they play a great team and they look better than the Nuggets and they're better than the Sixers and they whoop the Celtics. So they, when they're on, it's like, oh yeah, we got these great shooters and we got the best player in the league and we have specialists and we have guys who will take charges. Hey, we should have everything. But that's like one game out of three.
Yep. Yeah. It's these tantalizing flashes of like, oh, this is what they could be. And then it's like, yeah. I mean, we were, it was my kid's spring break for that Thunder game. So we were up in Green Bay and my wife and I and the kids were watching the game in the hotel room. And I was just rolling watching that Thunder game. I was like, this is unbelievable how much fun this is. It's like, this is who, like I said, this is who they can be. And then it's like, and then as soon as you see it, it's gone. And you're like, where'd it go?
Yeah.
What happened?
just talking back, kind of back and forth with my brother on this, but I do, and we saw it at the end of the last game, although Dame did get that shot off now. Between the calls that he's not getting, and you can tell he knows he needs a lot of separation on the ISO. So even if he has a big man on him, it's not like necessarily chicken dinner anymore. Like, he's got to really jump back on a step back.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll probably make it. I mean, you feel like he still makes 2 out of 3 of those shots when he gets it, if you don't count the ones where he just gets blocked, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so it's like you said, I have no real understanding of how much of that is like, well, is he in shape now? How much of that was that he wasn't in shape? Because, I mean, to me, it was almost like he was just as good at the beginning of the season. We were like, oh, I thought he'd be a little bit better, but he was going to the line 10 times a game, and he still hit a bunch of big shots at the beginning. I feel like he's hit big shots all year.
I think the rules you talked about, the way they're calling him, I think that's a really great point. You can see how visibly frustrated he is on some of these, that he's not getting to the line more.
I guess if it works out that, like, I can't imagine. Okay, so what, there's another week left? What is it?
Yeah, today? I think their last game is Wednesday night. Or no, next Friday? Next Thursday or Friday? I think, yeah, about a week, yeah.
Yeah, and then it goes into kind of that play-in weekend. I looked at this a couple of weeks ago. It goes into the play-in weekend, and then, or maybe the play-in is like Tuesday and stuff, and then it like goes into the weekend.
Yeah, I think their first playoff game will either be 2 weeks from today or 2 weeks from tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah. I'll say to whoever's listening, whoever, there's a possibility that we'll do a quick podcast after every game, and there's probably a higher probability that I'll mumble into the phone if Spotify hasn't taken that function away yet, which they said they're going to. I need to check on that. But it's probably, let me know in DMs what people think about this. We can do like a 5-minute phone mumbler and just get my takes off and I can be done. Or we can edit something within an inch of its life and it's always going to be late. Like, let me know what you would, the 5 people who listen to this, let me know what you would prefer. Cause I just have to imagine it's going to be a lot angrier if we just record right after the game. But maybe that's better. I don't know.
Take it easy. You know, I was known for working long and hard during training camp. Why, even after my teammates were asleep, I'd still be out practicing my moves, and that's still important. So I drink light beer from Miller. Light tastes great. It's got a third less calories than a regular beer, and the best thing is it's less filling. Because, listen, I still train the same way as the old days. Practice, practice, practice.
Light beer from Miller. Everything you always wanted in a beer, and less.
If I had to ask Chris for a prediction, I mean, gun to your head, how far do the Bucks go, I guess?
Oh, see, I hate to be Debbie Downer. I just feel like for the last maybe month or so, I just keep feeling like they're a second round team. Hmm. That they probably get a matchup like Indiana or something in the first round and win that. And then they end up getting, you know, Miami or Philadelphia or something in round 2 and probably lose that. And that's just, they felt like a second round of the playoffs team to me for about the last month now. I just haven't been able to shake that. I'd love to see him go further. I'd love to be proven wrong, but that's just how I feel at this point.
I'm laughing at myself even as I'm suggesting this. And I wasn't so much on the Budenholzer makes no adjustments train. I thought that was part of it, but I was just kind of on the, he's got a system and it's going to be the system. And sort of I don't think he thinks he was checked out, but I just think the nature of his system was to just, he said it after we were down 0-2 to the Suns. Just we have our habits. We have, you know, we have our habits. We're locked into our habits. We're going back home.
He said it in I'll never forget this quote. He said it in a CBS Sports article about the Bucks. We just kind of are who we are, and we do what we do, and we just sort of hope it works out.
Yeah,
that quote lived in my head rent free from the second I read it all the way to when he got fired.
Yeah,
that, like you said, that was just, you nailed that. Was Bud? It was just, the system is in place, and if you guys make the plays, the system works, and if you don't, it won't. But I'm not changing anything.
And I say fluke a lot. Fluke is way too strong of a word. Let's be clear. Fluke is too, but the way 2021 went wasn't exactly kind of Dirk storming through the West or whatever else like that. It was like a lot of crazy stuff had to work out.
Oh yeah.
If I wanted to be, I want to be positive, man. Like maybe we just in adjustment. I don't think adjustments is the word, but maybe when the Pacers are in front of us or the Sixers are in front of us or the Heat are in front of us, whether you think Doc is a good coach, I think he's a thoroughly kind of mediocre coach, but I do think his kind of brand of 90s button pushing and just, I don't perceive him to be easily intimidated or anything like that. And I wonder if he's more, not that it's the best thing that he does, but I wonder if he's appropriately calibrated for Eastern Conference playoff series ups and downs. And that's me grasping at straws, my guy. Like, I'm just grasping at straws. But maybe, like, we'll just be like, oh, he fixed that. Oh, AJ Green didn't play game one and two, and he got 20 minutes and was 4 for 6 or whatever. Like, I think he is comfortable being uncomfortable in a way that the Budenholzer teams either, like, won the title or just kind of folded. Mm-hmm. But if that's the best I can say, then maybe I'm saying second round upset two. But I'm just... I guess I'm still predicting a title, but I'm going to very much enjoy putting together the montage of me being way too excited and just watching my like take become less and less aggressive throughout the year until we lose to the Heat again or whatever. But
yeah, well, I think if you're looking for hope with Doc, and I mentioned this early on after he got hired, and it's probably one of the things I will try to hang my hat on when they go in the playoffs as a fan is, he certainly is known for blowing a lot of series leads.
Yes.
But you look at the players he had as the main guys, you know, you're talking about guys like Ben Simmons and Embiid and Harden and Blake Griffin. I mean, these are not closers per se. Right. And so my hope is that they get into these series and that Giannis and Dame will be able to be those closers that Doc hasn't had. And probably one of the things I would try to find, I'll look to for hope, if that makes sense. I hope it does.
Yeah, no, and also one of my kind of hobby horses is, dude, I would pay any, this should be a poll. I would pay real money. And by real money, I mean like just not a lot of, a great sum of money, but I wonder what the over under, if you were like, I bet you I would pay $50 if somehow I could guarantee that Bobby Portis was going to come out with a press conference quote like, the fans suck. You need to do better. You need to stand up more. We want you to be the loudest. I forget who, friend of the pod, Brendan Olin was at the Heat game over the weekend. He tweeted,
I saw him. Yeah, I followed
he's like, his tweet. And he's like, this is a way better crowd than us. And I'm like, that's not great.
I want to say this in a way that doesn't offend anybody, but it's just not in our nature as Sconnies. Yeah. You know what I mean? To make a lot of noise consistently. Sort of quiet Midwestern Lutheran people.
We need a gimmick. What's the gimmick?
You know what I mean? We just don't. I don't know. Cause I go to a Packer game every year too. And it's just the same way at Lambeau. It's just, why isn't this place louder? They've added seats. They closed the end zones to trap the sound in. Like 80,000 people, this should be so much louder. And it just isn't. That's my conclusion after living in this state for 13 years now, is it's just not in us to make a lot of noise.
And don't get me wrong. Like, I'm an old man now. Like I was very much, and I've talked about this every pod, so whatever. But in the 90s, I was very much had the sense, the inferiority complex about the BC, about empty seats at the Bradley Center, where, you know, we had 10 packs a lot of those years.
Yep.
And obviously the 90s Bulls were the 90s Bulls, but even, you know, like, but even like going right down to the, keeping it real, right down to the music that was being played. Like if they're playing whatever would have been big in 92, you know, if other arenas are playing, you know, Sir Mix-a-Lot or whatever, and where you got Warren Wiegrants and Street Life or whatever, and every, you know, I had an inferiority complex, because, and this is so foolish, but I just wanted Milwaukee to be so big, and I wanted it to be, obviously the hip hop thing was going on and like the culture was changing, all this stuff was happening, and there was something polka and cheese and, you know, like you said, the Scani stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Back when I cared about this when I was 16. So I do understand the dynamic of standing, and, you know, like, really, literally all my tweets are, why aren't people standing? And I do get that you kind of annoy people if you stand throughout the game. I don't really think you should stand the whole game or anything like that. But put standing, like, aside, I just want it to be loud.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we need to get vuvuzelas or if we just need another bark board or if the in-arena entertainment hype men aren't doing their job or if anyone cares. But, you know, like, I've watched the playoffs. I've watched just about every game of the playoffs just about my whole life when I had cable. Or if it's on in the background. And you see how the other arenas are. And sometimes it legitimately feels like we're the worst or we're like bottom two.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know. And I feel like, first of all, I feel like if Madden or two or three of the influencers got together, like the bid names got together, they could make this. It's just like anything else. Like, why was the take file a thing? Because the important people on Twitter and elsewhere were like, oh, this take file is ridiculous. Like, the take file got in and out of there in 2 years because, like, the right people cared about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know how we get the right people to be like, this is a time to get loud. Hey, it's okay if you stand up, if you sit right down again after a play or so. Like, you don't stand the whole game, but it's okay to stand. Sure. Hey, guys, we should stand at the end of quarters when we're up 28-20 in the first quarter. And everyone's playing well and everybody's hitting shots and Chris is hitting shots and it's a big game. It's okay to stand up for the last 15 seconds on defense. Go ahead, give them a little bit of bump. You don't have to do that too much, but how about five times a game you stand up and really do that? And I just don't know. I don't think I'd pay any more than $50, but I would literally pay $50 if Portis and Pat Beverly did like another Players Tribune article or whatever.
Because it probably has to come from them.
Yeah.
And I feel like Portis has... I feel like the fans, it's weird. I feel like the fans are more connected to Portis almost than they are Giannis in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And, or as connected anyways.
As we've seen, I love him. A lot of times he's a net negative player, right? A lot of times he hurts us more than he helps us.
Well, remember in the finals, what game was it in the finals when he got called for that foul and he was Deion high stepping up the court and Middleton had to rein him in and calm the bleep down. And
I think that was the fourth quarter of game six. It might have been the third quarter.
Was it game six? I'll never forget that. Middleton literally grabbing him by the shoulders and going, calm the bleep down.
Yes. Yes. And good job by him, by the way. But
yeah, absolutely.
But again, it's so emblematic of everything because it's like, okay, because we know that that's a thing. Bobby Portis hits two points and it's Bobby because we know that's a thing. It's like,
yep.
It's like, so does everyone else need like a thing? Like, I don't feel like we cheer for Giannis as much as
no,
we
you're
cheer
right.
for some of these other guys, you know.
Rogers throws a brilliant pass at Lambeau. John Kuhn gets a 4-yard gain at
right yep.
You're like, why aren't you guys this loud all the time?
It's a trigger. But again, it goes kind of, like you said, it goes back.
And
look,
we
need
triggers for everybody. You're right.
Like, I don't like wild, out of control fans. You know, I pretty much despise Philly fans. And, you know, I don't want, like, again, I don't want blood. I don't want violence in the streets. I don't want any of this stuff. But I'm just saying, like, there has to
right.
be
there
has to be a heightened level of stakes in the building. And I don't know. I'm talking out of my rear end, but like I hear that the fans are priced out. I tend not to particularly believe that. I feel like that if the fans have been priced out, I feel like the people in the building. I watch those close-ups, and you see the close-ups from behind the basket when Giannis dunks, and you see the golf claps, like you just do. You know,
you do. You really do.
And again, I don't know why it would be so hard to be like, okay. Again, because this is the kind of fan I was and am. It's like, okay, you know, I stood up more. I stand up more when I'm at a Hornets game or when I was at the game six for the Hawks game. I stand up, you know, I'm not a jerk about it. And there are a lot of Wisconsin people there. But you stand up at quarter breaks. Yeah, you know, stand up and clap.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it feels fun to do.
Green Bay, Wisconsin, 20 below. The last place you'd want to be with a cold. Unless you're the Green Bay Packerbackers. So we ask them to try Alka-Seltzer Plus cold medicine.
That stuff just cleared out my head.
Should have found it a long time ago. Got rid of my aches and pains.
Dried up my Ernie nose.
And Alka-Seltzer Plus, that's all I ever needed.
8 of every 10 Packer backers who tried it switched to Alka-Seltzer Plus cold medicine. Fast, effective relief for tough winter cold.
Anything else, man? Or so your prediction is second round and out.
Yeah. I just feel like there's been too much change this year for this thing to kind of come together. You know what I mean? And I think that's one of my frustrating. You talked about the Buck season. I was just thinking about this last night. One of the things that's frustrated me the most is that on paper, all of these moves they've made felt like the right ones, or the majority of them.
Yep.
And just so many of them have gone sideways. It's like, how is that possible that all of these moves, you know what I mean? Like bringing Brooke back, that made sense. And now Brooke looks old or whatever, you know, firing Bud. But then they didn't have a plan on who they wanted to replace him. So that went sideways. And it's just like,
it's
just, how about, you know what I mean? How has this all gone? How have all these moves not worked out?
And look, I'm not smarter than any of these coaches. I think it's pretty well-worn. You're not going to find too many people in the history of the NBA who says, oh, you should play a 10-man rotation when you get to playoffs. Everybody knows it's an 8-man rotation.
Yep.
And you're really criticized if it's like 9 men. With that being said, the reason for that historically is because you have the people you can really trust. And with a lot of really good teams, it's like, well, the 9th and the 10 men are basically as good as the 7th or the 8th men, but we trust them just that much more, or they're a little bit taller, or they're a little bit more flexible rotationally. And so, sorry, 9th and 10th guy, you're out, and you're never going to play unless somebody's in foul trouble or hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's for competent teams. And since we're not a competent and intelligent team, like, why can't everybody play 10 minutes? Like, why do we have to overplay Brook Lopez? Why do we have to? Why can't we play the kids some? Since we just have to accept that we're not really great at this, I don't know. Like, I don't know why he can't ride hot hands and do a lot of other wacky stuff. And again, I guess it's probably not smart to do that, but I've just seen nothing. Like, we had those infuriating kind of 5-man lineup kind of all that talk. Oh, look at our great 5-man lineups. And it's like, well, yeah, but if everybody knows the season hasn't worked, you know, and now all of a sudden I'm supposed to believe that Chris and Dame and Giannis are just going to be like this just unstoppable, like, trio.
Well, that's what I mean. That's why I say, it's like, if you're banking on this team to still win a championship, and I've certainly seen people on social media saying that, like, you're basically just saying Giannis, Chris, and Dame.
Yeah.
The talent of those three is so immense that it will overcome all of these other issues and shortcomings, and they'll win a championship. And I mean, I guess it's not crazy, but it just, I don't know if it works that way.
Well, the only possibility, or one of the big possibility, yeah, I don't think it works that way. It's just to be clear, I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah.
Is that every single year, the Jay Crowder kind of guys on other teams, the Kyle Lowry guys, like the Marcus Smart, all of a sudden they matter. And if all of a sudden maybe we don't lose to the Heat if Kevin Love doesn't take that charge, but Kevin Love does take that, right?
Yep.
And Pat Beverly is going to do some of that stuff with his one good hand. And we do have a couple of those guys. And so maybe, look, I'd be so thrilled if all of a sudden the scores were like 88 to 91 and we just, in a league where they never called as many calls in the playoffs, if all of a sudden we were just better equipped to kind of win that kind of game.
Like the 90s Eastern Conference style of.
Yeah.
Pacers might be their trick. That's probably going to, I think it has to be, doesn't it? Is just try to grind out a bunch of games.
I think no matter what happens, we may even do another pod tomorrow night and our mystery guest was like, well, I got to wait till the Knicks game. And I'm like, I don't need to see another game this year. The Knicks game, I don't care what happens these last three games or whatever it is. I've basically shut it down mentally to not hurt myself. Like, these last three games aren't going to teach me anything. And if they lose, and if they go into the playoffs losing their last 7 games, it means just about as much to me as anything else at this point. Just wait for the playoffs.
Sure. It's just been so much change this year, you know? It feels like they've changed coaches, they've changed strategies, they've changed from Drew to Dan. It just feels like maybe it was too much change all at once for this to kind of come together as anything meaningful.
And it's a shame. So on the way out, do you have any draft sleepers or anything that you particularly want the Packers to do or anything else that would tell us something nobody else knows?
Well, I don't know if I could say anything. You know, I don't know if I could say anything that no one else knows, because it's funny. I was just talking about this on Twitter the other night about how it feels like, and I don't ever remember this being the case, but it feels like all of the Packers blog people and podcast people and notable fans on Twitter, it feels like we all kind of like the same group of players this year for the Packers. And we kind of all feel like they have the same needs that they have to address. So I don't know if I could say anything that no one else knows or that no one else would say, but I feel like they've got to probably need to add another running back. I'd love to see him get someone to compete with Sean Ryan for the right guard spot. They need a third tackle, swing tackle, probably at least one, if not two linebackers, another safety. Yeah. All that stuff.
You know what? One more question. Kind of made me think of something else. And I think we've talked about aspects of this before. And generally speaking, I would say, you know, Ted Thompson and all these kind of beefs and all this kind of palace intrigue. But I would say generally the Packers did right by Favre and they did right by Rodgers. They had enough. However, if you could go back to 92, 93, with the knowledge of what you knew now, I know what everyone on talk radio and just kind of generally through the late Favre era was basically saying, and basically I wasn't right either. I don't think I recognized that the Packers could be more explosive until the Vikings got Randy Moss and they had Carter and Moss and Robert Smith, and it was just like, oh wow, they have a better offense than us.
Yep.
Even though we have, like, even with Randall Cunningham, they have a better offense. Like, yeah. You know, like, and then one of the, like, again, I was wrong about Rodgers. Rodgers eventually became incredible. But if you look at that Sports Illustrated photo where they had Jordy and where they still had Jennings and they had Jordy.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm saying all this to say, if I could do both of those eras again, I would have went far more all offense. And the rules keep changing to be slanted more to offense. But I think even what you kind of observe with the Niners, and look, the Niners are maybe a bad example because they've got kind of everything, or they have had everything. But I would just keep drafting offensive skill players. I'd draft another tight end. I'd just keep drafting talent.
Yep.
In a Peyton Manning kind of sense, because I think I think you can't really rely on defense. And I think all of those things help you to have a better, we play in the cold and all that. But I just think there was a time, and I know you remember this, when Freeman got old and Freeman was kind of more dropsy. Yep. And Brooks was out and they had Derek Mays and then they had the Terry Glenn.
Billy Schrader and
yeah,
Corey Bradford. And,
dude, those are the 2K years. Like, it's so like for 2K on Dreamcast, like you said, it was Corey Bradford. It was Bill Schrader.
Yeah.
Bill Schrader was 84. He's like our number two receiver.
Yeah.
with Driver, right? Or I'm trying to remember, was Driver there?
That shows you how brilliant Favre is. Favre got both those guys paid.
Yeah.
Schrader got that contract with the Lions. And, I can't remember who signed Corey Bradford, but was it the Houston Texans? Someone signed Bradford. But both those guys got big money. And I was like, I don't think either one of these guys are that good.
And we thought Javon Walker was that good. And obviously some other stuff happened. But it was like, but I didn't, again, even when they were like, hey, Favre wants Tony Gonzalez, it seemed like a pipe dream. But we didn't. Like, all those guys were good enough, like the Bubba Franks class of tight end, or like the good blocking kind of tight end, or like all that stuff was Cordova. And obviously there were years where the Packers had an embarrassment of riches, you know, the one Risen year and other times. But I'm saying all this to say, as we project forward with Love, were it up to me, even if we need a linebacker or we need this, or even if, like, I would draft twice for the offense to every once for the defense and just be a unbalanced team. Because I think, especially in these early years, and especially we saw it with Rodgers, I just want talent everywhere. And even like a lot of these young guys, it seems like basically they just hit on all these picks. So they all seem very good. More, like the Kanye meme, just more, yeah.
I think you could definitely make an argument for that. Sure. I mean, because I know Ron Wolf has always said his biggest regret was not giving Favre more top shelf playmakers.
Yeah. It was perfectly balanced.
I think you'd certainly make that argument that they should make the offense, you know, as good as it can be for Love. And that's why I think they need to look offensive line early, yeah, often. You know, I think you see how quickly things can change in the league when your offensive line isn't set. The Packers should be looking to stock that up as much as possible. I agree with you. You know, like at running back, they signed Josh Jacobs. Let's get another one and have Jacobs and another guy. Now we've got two guys back there. So I definitely understand what you're saying and agree to an extent. Yeah, for sure. That should always be the goal, to make sure Jordan Love has as much around him as possible.
Because as diabolical as it seemed, and obviously I know they didn't really do this on purpose, but like, dude, Aaron Jones looked like Marshall Faulk when he just came back for those last few games. All of a sudden, I was like, it was shocking how good. I mean, again, and I don't watch the games that close all the time, but I was like, he was running hard.
He was great.
He looked incredible.
Yeah, he really did.
And so it was like, yeah, let's not have him be hurt week 4, 5, 6 and kind of have all this back and forth. I don't know that they really intended to do it, but I was like, wow, the one bit of sadness I kind of have with how last season went is just he seemed so like Mr. Packer then, and he was just really getting his roses.
Yep.
It just would have been
as soon as he was really starting to get the full appreciation.
Yeah.
All of a sudden he's gone.
Because we knew we needed him, but it was like, you know, a lot of these screen passes, it seemed like it was going for 3 yards, and he was just, I mean, it was speed and power. It just was really impressive. And yet,
that's as good as he's ever looked. Yeah. No doubt.
That's true.
Here's how the Mighty Packer Pack takes care of Randy Moss and the sorry Vulcan. The Vikings remind me of Bonnie, purple and soft.
Yeah, we trust those purple panties. Yeah,
Moss is soft. I can't stand listening to him anymore. Please get NFL 2K1. Go online through Dreamcast and put the bratwurst loving, cheesehead smelling Packer Pack in their place. You'll find them at Sega.net. Do the right thing, y'all. Sega.
Yeah, man. Anything else?
I don't know. Did you want to talk? You said you wanted to talk about Griffin or Bud, or did you have thoughts on that or no?
I talk about it every week. What are your thoughts?
So, I just want to say, because I don't know where else I'd say this, I still feel really bad for Adrian Griffin.
Yeah,
I do. What a brutal situation to be dropped into for your first time as an NBA coach. And I don't feel like enough people have sort of talked about that like, that was tough. You know what I mean? He'd never been a coach before. He should have started out coaching like the Charlotte Hornets,
mm-hmm,
or the Pistons, and like learn to develop his style.
Yep.
He gets thrown into Milwaukee. The analogy I made for it was, I've been making was, it's like, if we have some time here, it's like if he was an assistant manager at a well-regarded pizza restaurant. And then this other pizza joint was opening up, and they're like, Adrian, we want you to come run our joint. And he's like, all right. And then they're like, a week before they open, they're like, just kidding, we're going to be a Chinese restaurant now. And he's like, what? Like, no, you don't have one of your top employees is gone now. And now it's Dame, and now you're a Chinese restaurant. It's like, huh?
Yeah.
So now he's trying to coach a team that he wasn't given. You know what I mean? Like, that wasn't that they were supposed to have Drew as like the free safety of the defense, like the leader of it, king and all. And then he's gone. So now they can't run the scheme they want to run. He's never been a coach before. And oh, by the way, if you don't win a championship this year, you're a failure.
Yep.
I just feel bad for him. Like, what a crappy deal for your first time as a coach.
And, you know, and this is kind of the difficult thing with being a power forward. Disciplinarian guy is going to be part of your thing. And everyone knows, like, people talk so much about, I'm drawing a blank on the name, the European coach that LeBron got fired.
And, oh yeah. David Blatt.
David Blatt, right? And it's the same kind of thing everybody like talks about in the NBA, that you really only get a couple of chances to mess up or to lose a locker room, and then it's just kind of lost. Because they're either like, I mean, Phil Jackson good tactically and everything. And but just the like I'm rereading kind of his book, which you know may or may not be in the bathroom sometimes. And
oh, his diary entry book.
No, this it's an unauthorized biography. It is a bunch of
that one that he wrote that was like his diary entries or whatever. That was great. That was a great book.
Was it really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Well, I mean, it's my son is always in trouble too, so it's like we take away his privileges, but I'll let him come in here and watch The Last Dance with me. I'm trying to indoctrinate him in other kind of sports stuff. And again, it's not the point is not that any of these guys are infallible, but there is like you said, I wish he could have been on the Bucks bench first. Well, there's two things. And people who've listened to this, I make everybody mad by talking about this. And a lot of people, I feel like, if you listen to this podcast, basically, from the people who reach out, generally they agree. So I feel like I kind of hurt people's feelings when I zag, when they want me to zig or whatever. I just don't know why they hired him. But my frustration is just that I guess we're never going to get a book on this, or we're never going to know, or it's not going to be a Last Dance where everybody gets together and there's an Isaiah Thomas and Jordan chapter, not Griffin and whatever happened with Stotts or whatever. I just want to know. But there's kind of this cloud of, well, Doc was like the fake consultant, but then they gave Doc the job, but then Doc played coy. I want to know about all of that. And again, I'm sure it's all in athletic subscriptions. I'm sure there's more nuggets, but even like we know what Chris Haynes says, because Chris Haynes is getting leaks from Dame or whatever. Like
Dame and Giannis, right?
Yeah, right. Dame Giannis. We know who's like friendly with people, but it's such an interesting story. And I think a lot of people, I mean, well, let me ask you, I'm guessing the answer is yes. Were you familiar with kind of the whole discourse around people wanting to get him fired early in the game, or people wanting to be the first one to say that he should be fired? Like,
you mean Griffin?
Yes. Were you around for that?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely saw a lot of the tweets and stuff and read the articles. And I thought a lot of people did jump the gun. I thought a lot of people were very, because I'll be honest, I wasn't thrilled with the hire. But I was like, well, all right, he's our guy now. So let's give him a chance. And I was kind of shocked by how quickly so many people were trying to get rid of him. That definitely surprised me.
It would be like if it was the Ray Rhodes year, except if the Packers did.
I think a lot of people were, and that's a great comment, because I think a lot of people wanted Ray Rhodes fired pretty quickly too.
Right. But it would be like if you said, if like in training camp, you know, the Packers got, you know, Herman Moore or something like that, or Barry Sanders, that all of a sudden it was like the expectations went up.
Can you answer me? We never got, I feel like Griffin never got to coach the team that he was hired to coach.
Yeah.
They wanted him to have Drew as the point of attack guy, and Drew was going to be kind of the all-purpose havoc wreaker for the defense. And then Drew was gone and they couldn't run that system.
Mm-hmm.
So we never got to see it. And the Stotts thing, that's another one of those that seems like a good idea on paper, but when you remember that it's actual human beings, why would Griffin want Stotts? And why wouldn't he, you know what I mean, take umbrage with that? Like, you think I'm good enough to coach, but you also don't think I'm good enough to coach?
Right.
Well, so and the Stotts thing seemed like a great idea, but in hindsight, that was not a great decision either to bring him aboard.
Do you recall hearing, and again, this, I don't remember. I feel like it was out there, or at least people were interpreting or kind of taking the next logical step. But I feel like when we hired Griffin, there was a lot of like, you think it's Nick Nurse that did all that stuff to us, but really it was this dude, Griffin. This is really his defense. All this blitzing, all this pressure, mm-hmm. all the stuff that drove you nuts in 2019. I don't even know if he's on the team then, but there was, I felt like if I didn't hear this stated, at least everybody was hinting at like, no, this is the real dope. We got the real guy,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to do this kind of thing. And I don't know if that was true or just misinterpreted or what, but there was a lot of like, don't, everybody hates Nick Nurse. It's not, and people were, Nick Nurse wore out his welcome in Toronto also.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just kind of this idea, yeah, Nick Nurse, whatever, this is the dude. And I feel like I heard a lot of that.
Yeah, I definitely think there was a lot of that too.
So yeah, just have to wait and see.
Yeah, it's just there's so much, it's just been so many moving pieces. Kind of, I don't want to repeat myself, but so many things that just haven't lined up. You know, they hire a coach to run a scheme, then they change the scheme, that everything changes when Dame comes. And now he doesn't mesh with Dame and everybody. So now out goes the coach. And now in comes Doc. And now Doc's, you know what I mean? It's just so many moving parts. It's like, I think we're going to look back at the end of the season. I think in a couple of years, we'll look back and go, why did we ever think they would have won a championship with all that change?
Yeah.
This will be great, by the way, to play back when they win the championship, but.
Won't that be great?
Yeah, trust me. It'd be great to go back and listen to this when they win.
But that's actually, even though, like I said, I would say, don't get me wrong, like people listen to this, but like the YouTube videos, it's like 20-1. But I don't really, first of all, I don't put myself in my YouTube videos, but like, I don't know how to narrativize this season. Like maybe the best would be just all the stupid stuff that people said that I said, or all what people, because to me, like the most interesting thing about the season is how we felt about it, how we remember it. Is sometimes lined up with how we felt about it. But like usually, you know, you have seasons where stuff's going well and then everything falls off a cliff. And then there's like, I mean, Dame said it the other night, like it's darkest before the dawn kind of yep. thing. Usually there's like I think maybe the first video I made or one of the first couple I made, it was like the Bucks were mathematically basically 10% chance of making the playoffs or something like that. And then they went to the West Coast trip and won 4 out of 2 or something and then came back and the Bucks, you know, whatever that was to make the 7th seed.
Yeah,
one of those years, and the Bucks won 15 out of the last 22 or something like that, right? But that's what you need. I don't know how to narrativize this. It's been a roller coaster.
I don't really know if it's possible. That's like I was saying to you a little while ago. I don't really know if it's possible to succinctly, you know, summarize all this in one line or two lines. It's just so much. So many ups and downs and so many changes.
It feels like no lessons have been learned. It feels like they're just as good or bad as they were in game one as they will be in game 82.
Yep.
I think Giannis has been very good.
I think he's been brilliant. I think that's probably the thing that's disappointed me the most about this season, especially the second half post All-Star break, is that he's out there killing himself every night. You can see it, you know, and he said it at himself, I think it was at the All-Star game, you know, whatever I have to do to rally this team, I'm going to do. And he meant that. And it's been frustrating to see him doing everything he can and 35, 10, and 10 every night and Bucks lose.
And
been the most disappointing thing I think about the second half in particular, but the season as a whole, is he's been so good. And it does feel like they've kind of wasted that.
And I feel like, and give a half a nod to Kid on this, I feel like we want him dunking on people, but that player is starting to go away. He airballed that one alley-oop, blah, 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 and sometimes around the basket, but I feel like he's really good most of the time getting his layup angles and making incredible layups.
Yeah.
And if he just slows down for a second, if you're looking for the pass, if you're like a dual threat where you're always kind of looking for the pass, it stops you from driving. And I'm sure game one of the playoffs, no matter who we play, he's going to be a million miles an hour for a minute also. But I do think him being kind of trying to make his little version of Magic Johnson passes has led to a little bit more self-preservation for himself. But I've been really, other than leadership, man, I've been really impressed with his maturation. Mm-hmm. as his on court game and as a player.
Do you think he'll be a guy? Because I wonder about this. Like you touched on it a second ago. As the athleticism starts to leave a little bit and he gets into his 30s, do you think he'll be somebody that can develop, not obviously on this level, but an Olajuwon-esque low post game that will allow? Because I think that's the key to extending his career.
I actually think he can.
I think he can too. I think he can. I kind of think he will.
He's not a natural basketball player, but he's such a natural athlete. And that's the kind of the thing everybody, I mean, you grew up with this, like the thing everybody said about Olajuwon was 6'2" or something, was playing soccer. Yep. And I think he only ever really got to like 6'10", 6'10 and a half, but he was just, he's just such a natural athlete. Like Olajuwon could have been a boxer. He could have been anything.
One of the most fluid athletes I think I've ever seen.
Right. And like a lot of those moves, I mean, he made those moves, him and Mikhail. I mean, he just had a way about him. So I do think there's a potential for some of that once he realizes that the dunks will be kind of two, three years from now. If he dunks, it's going to be because he snuck it by somebody.
Right.
He's been more athletic for longer and proved and put the clown suit on me and a lot of other people who thought this was probably going to be done around 2020. It's been shocking. I mean, but look, I don't know what people are taking. I mean, that's another question. I was listening to an old Simmons for something else about Klay Thompson, where I was trying to pull. I was listening to an old Simmons, and it was like 2019, and they're like, "Wow, Draymond's sounding good. Draymond's probably going to be winding down, though. Can you really be like? I think this was mid Durant. Maybe this is when Durant was going to leave again, and Draymond's still around and highly effective psycho. So I do think there is something. I think perhaps a lot of these guys will still fall off a cliff when they hit 36, but I do think 28 to 34 for a lot of these guys, there's just almost no fall off for a lot of them.
It's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
It is pretty incredible how these guys are still doing what they do, what Durant is still doing and Curry. I mean,
and if it ramps up, dude, if it ramps up for the playoffs and we just get the best version of everybody for the, see again, you talk, there you go. Now I'm smiling again. If we get the best version of everybody for the playoffs, and if they were really playing possum a little bit, even though I don't believe that, Chris, if I just don't watch any more Bucks basketball until game one, maybe I'll still really be excited and think we can do it. But I can't
watch.
You know
what's funny? Chris, but you know what's so funny? Like I sit here and say, I think they're a second round team, but I mean, when you're right, when game one starts, I'll be, here we go. We're going to win the championship. It's the dual nature of at least how I am as a fan, where I'm like, I don't think they're going to do it. But then there's part of me that's like, well, but they could.
Right. I think it'll be a lot of, which is why I've been a lot less coherent this year, just because like I've been so mad. Like, you know, I can listen to a fair amount of podcasts at work generally.
I don't think this has been a good year to be coherent anyways with the podcast.
Well, it hasn't, but it's like, I just don't like,
I think it's totally acceptable.
Like I haven't, look, I haven't supported, like, you know, I got a lot of people who do Bucks podcasts. I haven't supported all the names plus Camille plus whoever. Like I don't want to listen to a Bucks recap, man. I don't.
Well, I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
I'm sure there's been a million stories that I haven't been up on or just haven't listened to, but I just don't want to hear the spin positive. I come on here and spin positively, but like, I don't want to hear anybody else do it.
I know. Yeah, for sure.
And it's such a downer.
No, I definitely know what you mean.
Hey, man, thanks for coming on.
No, thanks. This was fun.
We couldn't.
Thanks
do
for having
it.
Me.
We couldn't do it like a year ago. Like something happened. I'm trying to remember what. And so we.
I
were,
think that timing just didn't. It never worked out right for us.
Yeah.
But this is fun. Yeah. Yeah. I'm happy to come on anytime.
You're our. You're still, as much as I love Tresky, you're our de facto Packer insider. So I need.
Well, I'll take that. That's great.
Tell them one more time where to find you. Are you on Spotify also, or what's?
Yeah. So if you go to if you're on iTunes or Spotify, just search for Packers Talk, and then you'll see our logo. It's green, brown, yellow. It says PackersTalk.com on the bottom. That's the feed for all of our shows. We have five now, so just search there, and then that's where you'll be able to find my show. And I'm going to be doing a ton of stuff, starting probably in the next week or so, up to the NFL draft. So
it's excellent stuff. It's excellent stuff. So, man, hey, I appreciate you, and we will be back on the show. Maybe I'll record an outro a little bit later. I probably won't, but we may do another one Sunday night. Another kind of quickie story. I guess this was still an hour. Plus, but we'll do maybe another short episode, and then we'll probably go dark for a little bit. But appreciate everybody. Zip it up, zip it out.
Defended by the late Beasley. Box with a chance to tie or take the lead in the final few seconds. Shot clock still in play.
No timeout called.
Chris Middleton crosses over. Chris for the lead.
Now you got a foul. Got to get him.
They stop it with about 15 seconds.
You couldn't have asked for a better situation. I like the fact Doc didn't call a timeout. He got the matchup he wanted. Chris had just burned Olynyk the possession before. The same move, the crossover right to left, step back, and just could not get that second one to fall.
Continues to be a battle, but it's darkest before dawn.